My name's Harry, I'm an addict.
Harry.
Nice to be here. First time at this meeting, and Gemma, hard act to follow. I thought she did remarkably well. As I was coming down into this room, this is the first time here, like I said, in Trafalgar, and as I was coming down into the room, it was hard to believe that I was coming down into a room of addicts because of the laughter and the fun that I was hearing, you know what I mean, coming from you guys, and then to come down here and see you guys as well, dressed well. You know what I mean? Looking beautiful, you know, and not looking like addicts, to be quite honest with you, you know. And I'm aware also that I don't look like an addict as well. Well, I hope I don't look like an addict in any case. I'm not a music addict in any case. And I always like to start off by talking about my first meeting, my first NA meeting. Because I do hear sometimes people who say they don't want to talk about the using because we all know what our using's like, but actually we're here for the newcomer. And when I was a newcomer, you know what I mean? I needed to relate. I needed to have some kind of identification with you guys to know that you were actually addicts and not... Well, I didn't know what you were, you know what I mean? So I'm not going to do a big drug-a-log, and I'm not going to tell you about the fun I had in my using, because I did have quite a lot of fun, I must be honest with you, you know what I mean? And to be honest with you guys, if I still had fun, I would still be out there doing it. You know, there was no big finger from God that came down, you know, sort of tapped me on the shoulder and said, you know what, Harry, drugs are bad. You know what I mean? I kind of knew that in any case. That was part of the attraction. You know what I mean? But when I came to this fellowship, I was completely and utterly, you know, I was gone. You know, I was a broken human being. I was a broken man. I'd forgotten how to live like a human being. I'd forgotten how to look after myself. I'd forgotten about anything to do with relationships. I didn't understand the meaning of the word relationships. I didn't know how to work. I didn't know how to look after myself. All that kind of stuff, you know. I'd never heard of Narcotics Anonymous either. Narcotics Anonymous hadn't been going that long when I first got clean, and I got clean out in Australia. I didn't know much about Narcotics Anonymous, you know. We had a paperback basic text at the time with no stories in the back. That was our literature. And you wouldn't believe it today, the way people talk about the step working guys and the works how and why, but we did get clean in those days, even without all that literature. But you know what? Somebody phoned up on my behalf. They phoned up this thing called Narcotics Anonymous. And when they did that, I saw them having this kind of conversation. I was kind of gouching out on the sofa, and they were having this conversation. And anyhow, this woman passes the phone to me, and she says, they want to talk to you. And I was immediately suspicious, you know what I mean? They want to talk to me? Who want to talk to me? She said, they're called Narcotics Anonymous. Well, I've got to be honest, I was immediately interested. It had the word narcotics in it, had the word anonymous in, you know what I mean? And at that time, I was trying to get onto a methadone program, which at that time was very difficult in Australia. And so the phone was passed to me, and this guy on the other end said, my name's Gordon and I'm an addict. And I sort of answered, I said, yeah, Gordon, can you tell me how to get onto a methadone program? You know what I mean? And to this day, I am so pleased that he didn't say methadone program, Harry. This is a program of complete abstinence from all drugs, you know what I mean? You're going to see the word God on the wall, etc., etc., like that, you know what I mean? So he said, why not come to a meeting? So I can tell you quite honestly that I came to my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting expecting there to be methadone there. And because I expected there to be methadone there, I was a good half an hour early as well. This was in January the 1st, 1985, which was a coincidence. It wasn't a New Year's resolution. It just happened to be a coincidence. So I turned up at this meeting half an hour early, and the first guy who came in, he walked up to me and he said, are you waiting for the meeting to start? And I looked at him and I thought, well, I might be. Why? You know what I mean? And he stuck his hand out and he said, my name's Derek and I'm an addict. And he shook my hand. And I looked at this guy and I thought, he's like no addict I've ever seen. For a start, he had a suntan. I mean, have you ever heard such a thing? An addict with a suntan, you know what I mean? I had the addict suntan, which was just basically bright white, you know what I mean? My body hadn't seen the sun for years, for about 4 or 5 years, you know. So there he is telling me he's an addict, he's got a suntan, he's wearing decent clobber. He's got a watch on as well. My watch was the first thing down the old pawn shop when the using started getting bad, you know. And he was wearing some decent, and he had a smile on his face, for heaven's sake, you know what I mean? A smile. And I'm looking at this man thinking, oh, maybe. And then just before the meeting started, I was introduced to about another five or six other people who came up to me and also introduced themselves as addicts. And they all looked so different to one another. I remember one looked like a bank teller, one looked like a surfie, one looked like a hippie, you know what I mean? But they all came in, they all shook my hand and identified as being addicts. And I'm basically looking at these guys thinking, amateurs. To be honest with you, the only person who looked like an addict in this place was me. You know what I mean? I had long hair, it was dirty, I had a jean jacket on in the middle of the Australian summer. So I had this jean jacket on, and I cut a hole in the sleeve just here. Nice little square hole, so I didn't have to roll my sleeve up to hit up. Dried blood around it, you know what I mean? I thought, I'm serious, you know what I mean? But so anyhow, when I'm thinking, do I ask? Is this the point where I ask for the methadone? You know what I mean? So I go into this meeting. I had this kind of fantasy, I think. My head was full of fantasies, you know, like what you said, you know, about, you know, thinking you were going to make it big. I just fantasized that I would have enough drugs to last me for the rest of my life. And I had this fantasy that I'd walk into this meeting and there'd be this polished oak bar and they'd pump up, you know, like an old English pub, 120 ml of methadone and say, there, Harry, on your way. And they gave me a cup of coffee. And by this time, so I'm thinking, well, the things we have to do for our drugs, I'm thinking maybe at the end of the meeting. It's all going to come. And of course, by this time, I've seen these things on the wall. You know, it's nice to see calico here as well, because in Australia, we have the calico on the wall. And, you know, the first thing that hit me was the word God. And I think, oh, no, God. They're going to give me a tambourine and they're going to give me a pair of sandals and I'm going to sit there singing Jesus Wants Me for a Sunbeam or something like that, you know what I mean? I'd sing the word moral, spiritual, all these words that frightened the life out of me, but I was determined to sit there because I thought I was going to get my methadone, you know. And you know what? It was just fantastic, you know what I mean? I sat in that meeting and what I got from that first meeting was hope. As soon as those people opened their mouths and they kind of did a mini version, they did like Gemma did, they talked about what it was like, how they came into NA, and they talked about this strange thing they called recovery, which I really didn't understand what they were talking about, but they talked about that. But what I really identified with was their using and the desperation that they got to at the end of their using. And the one word that characterised, I mean, I could tell you about the broken relationships, the financial problems, the lack of work, unemployability. I could talk to you about all that sort of stuff. But you know what characterised the end of my using was a complete and utter lack of hope. Completely hopeless. I'd never met a recovering addict. I didn't know what a recovering addict meant. You know what I mean? I thought, you know what I mean? I just didn't understand what the word recovery meant. If you'd said to me recovery at that time, I would have said, what about a chemist that sells me three bottles of codeine Linctus a day? That would have been my ambition in life, you know. Chemists would lock their door when they saw me coming. They wouldn't sell me aspirin, let alone codeine Linctus, you know. So that was that hopelessness, that complete lack of hope that there was any way. I didn't need to come to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. If you'd said to me before an NA meeting, where are you going to end up, Harry? I could have told you I'll end up dead, I'll end up in an institution, or I'll end up in jail. I didn't need to hear the literature to know that, you know what I mean? That's where people who use drugs like I use drugs, some people use far longer, not as long as I did. I came in when I was 27 years old, you know, and I was broken. You know, and I knew that's where we ended up. In fact, the harder I tried to control my using, the worse I got. There was this paradox, you know what I mean? And you know what it'd be like, those broken promises of the night before. You know, you would make those promises. I still have never made promises to myself like I made in those days. I would promise myself with every fibre of my body that tomorrow was going to be different. And tomorrow was never any different. Other than the fact I needed more money to get together more drugs, you know what I mean? That was the only thing. And in the end, I just gave up trying. I gave up. So I arrived in this fellowship hopeless. And to sit in that first meeting and to hear people, and I knew within that 90 minutes of that meeting starting that I was sitting, and every one of those addicts who I'd judged before coming in, I knew that they were addicts. And that's why I like to tell a little bit about my story. Because if I hadn't heard that, if they'd gone straight into their recovery, you know, I wouldn't have stayed, I don't think. I needed that identification. You'll be pleased to hear I didn't stay clean from my first meeting. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because, you know, I like it when we read out the It Works How and Why, and I really like that first paragraph before we read it out, which says, if you want what we have to offer and are willing to make the effort to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. These are the principles that made our recovery possible. And, you know, when I first came in, if you want what we have to offer, tick, and are willing to make the effort to get it, you know what I mean? I was going to be the guy who was going to be able to drink. I was going to be the guy who was going to be able to smoke spliff, you know what I mean? And you know what it's like when you're coming down. You need to sleep, so I'd handfuls of sleeping pills. And of course, my depression was far worse than anybody else's. You know what I mean? You possibly couldn't understand my depression. Handfuls of antidepressants, you know what I mean? So I heard total abstinence. I never really understood it. I never really understood how that would apply to me. So what then happened for the next month, I came to meetings, and I came to meetings regularly, and by the end of that month, I'd seen hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of recovering addicts. And that was probably the worst time of my using, because for the first time, I knew there was a way out. You know what I mean? I always thought once a junkie, always a junkie. That was my experience. And to come to these rooms and find people who were getting clean was unbelievable. And I couldn't do it. And I couldn't do it because it hadn't occurred to me that Harry's best efforts are the reason I'm sitting here in the first place. Even after 31 years of clean time, Harry's best efforts are the reason I'm sitting here tonight. I've learnt not to trust myself an awful lot, you know what I mean? Because I know what I'm capable of. So I went through that first month of going to meetings. And on the 31st of January, I remember being in a meeting of the Red Noses and Bedwetters, God bless them. You know, without them, we wouldn't be here. But I was there on a daytime meeting between 12 and 2 o'clock. And there was a guy sitting in front of me, and he'd obviously just been paid, and he had his pay packet sticking out of his back pocket. And I was wondering if I could possibly nick it and make the door at the same time. You know what I mean? That's what my life was about. I didn't. Heaven knows what sort of karma I would have accrued had that happened, you know what I mean? But I didn't. I sat there at that meeting. And I left that meeting and I was waiting to score. And I went and I was waiting to score, and the dealer was turning up at 2:30. And something happened. I'm not quite sure what it was. I went in, it was in a church hall, a bit like here downstairs. And I went upstairs into the church itself to wait till 2:30 because it was cool in there. And I went in and... you know what I mean? I hit my knees and I surrendered. And I can't really explain it. If you've surrendered, you know what I mean. You know, had I had a white flag, I would have waved it. You know what I mean? I became teachable. If you want what we have to offer, tick, and are willing to make the effort to get it. And I think at that point, I became willing to make the effort to get what was on offer. And I had a list of phone numbers in my pocket that I had from the first meeting. And I started ringing up those numbers until I found somebody who was in. They suggested this cold turkey short-term one-week detox centre in Sydney, and I went along to that. And one of the great things about this place was they so believed in the 12 steps, you know, of AA and NA. And when we were in there, they would take us to 2 or 3 meetings a day. You know what I mean? Not a week, 2 or 3 meetings a day, and that's what I needed. You know, even though I was sick and I was sweating and I was just all over the place, I needed to go to those meetings. And I liked going to the meetings. I felt safe in the meetings, you know, because a week later I came out of there with 7 days clean, still not really understanding why I was clean, you know, still not really understanding about the total. It's funny really, isn't it? You don't understand total abstinence, the importance of it, until you become totally abstinent. Yeah. You know what I mean? And somebody, I think it was Gemma, was saying, you know, it's not about the drugs. It's about the addiction. And it was that was the first little inkling, you know what I mean, that the drugs were actually a symptom of the problem, and my problem is addiction. And that's what I love about the first step of Narcotics Anonymous, you know. We get straight to the nub of the matter. We don't talk about being powerless over a particular thing, we talk about being powerless over our addiction. And I love that, you know what I mean, straight to the heart of the matter, you know. And you can only really grasp that once you get totally abstinent. So there I was, 7 days clean. And I remember the last day I was there, I was in this detox centre, and I asked to be let out at 5:00 in the morning. I hadn't slept for the week I was in there, and I asked to be let out, and they let me out. And you know, this detox was part of a mental institution which was set in beautiful grounds. And I sat there with my back against a eucalyptus tree, 6 days clean, and I watched the sun come up. You know, not much, but, you know, I watched the sun come up. And for the first time in I don't know how many years, when I watched the sun come up, my head didn't go in my hands. And I thought, what the fuck am I going to have to do today to get hold of the money, to get hold of the drugs? The sun came up and it was beautiful. It hurt my eyes. And I could smell the eucalyptus from the tree that I was sitting underneath. Again, not much, but I realised that my senses and everything had been deadened in the time that I'd been using. And just to smell that eucalyptus tree was just unbelievable. It was the beginning of what I believe was a spiritual experience, you know what I mean? Which has continued through my recovery. So I left that place, and I left that place 7 days clean, and you know, and just started attending meetings, and attending lots of meetings. I feel very, very grateful that in those times in Sydney there were many meetings to go to. NA was and still is over there a big fellowship, you know, and I could go to 3 meetings a day. I've since been lucky enough to travel around the world, and I've been to places where there are 24-hour-a-day meetings, which I think is an incredible resource. You know, an incredible resource for an addict who wants to get clean. So anyhow, I left there, like I said, 7 days clean, and I was, you took away the drugs, guys, and you took away 98% of whom I was. My whole life revolved around the getting and using of drugs, you know what I mean? And you took that away, and I often say I was a 2% person. I was hollow inside. There was nothing inside. And I'd forgotten how to live like a human being, like I said. So I just used to go to meetings. I saw them as my spiritual filling station, you know. And I kind of understood the meaning of the word. I had problems with the word God for quite a few months after I first came into recovery, but I never had any problems with the word spiritual because I understood what a lack of spirit was. I understood I had no spirit. You know what I mean? And to sit there and smell the eucalyptus tree, there was that little flicker inside me that made me think, you know what? There is something more to life. Maybe there is something to this recovery thing. You know, so what I would do is it would be like I would be on fast revs, you know what I mean, in early recovery. You know what it's like. You get into early recovery and you step onto that emotional roller coaster, don't you? Well, I did. You know, I step onto an emotional roller coaster, and I was up and I was down and I was all over the bloody place in that first year of being clean. You know what I mean? And sometimes, what have I done wrong? I feel almost suicidal, you know. And then later on in the day, I'd feel fantastic, you know what I mean? And then by the time I'd gone to bed, I'd feel like almost suicidal again. I just didn't know what was going on. For so many years, I'd kept the lid on. You know what I mean? And the more the pressure built up inside, the more I needed to keep the lid on. And eventually when I took the drugs away, which is what I tried to keep the lid on, you know, it was like a jack-in-the-box. I was all over the place, you know. And so in Australia we have this expression where we do head miles. You know, we talk about doing head miles when you go over there, you know, like a little racing car racing around. And what would happen was my head would do these head miles and my spiritual fuel tank would go down really quickly. And I'd go to a meeting and I don't know what happened, but it would fill up again. I'd feel all right, and I'd get identification. I would know I was not the only person, and that was so useful to me, you know, when I first came around. The other thing was, like I said, it was just alluded to, we didn't have much in the way of literature at that time, other than the 12 steps. We had step programs, and we didn't have any step working guides. And you know what? I'm really quite pleased about that. You know, there was no real pressure on me to work the steps. The pressure on me was to come to meetings. And even then, it was left up to me. You know what I mean? Come to meetings, Harry. You know, we hope you come to meetings. Keep coming back. When I was relapsing in the first month of coming around, it was kind of, well, you've been back out in the research department again. Keep coming back. And that I so believe in the power of these meetings. You know what I mean? I really do. I think without the meetings, you don't have the steps, you don't have the sponsorship, you don't have the service. And whilst those things are incredibly important to me, and I wouldn't have got in my recovery as far as I have got, it wouldn't be nothing without meetings. You know what I mean? And what is a meeting? You know, one therapeutic value of one addict helping another, you know. So I came into these rooms and I didn't start working the steps because I dismissed them, really. I'd seen them up there, I'd seen people getting clean, and I kind of dismissed them. I thought, well, I don't really need to do these. But you know what? If somebody had come up to me about 3 months clean and said, why have you given up all drugs? I would have told you, because if I pick one up, I knew that if I picked one up, I would be back on the merry-go-round again. I knew that. You know, I knew that one was too many, 1,000 never enough. And why was that important to me? Because if I pick one up, my life, which was already a bit of a mess, would be completely and utterly chaotic, unmanageable. Now, if that's not step one, I don't know what is. I didn't need to learn that. You know what I mean? That's why I was sitting in these rooms in the first place. That's why I'm sitting here in the first place. Because I am powerless over my addiction. My life is unmanageable. You know what I mean? So I knew that from when I first came around, you know, when I first sat in these rooms. And if you said, well, why are you sitting in a meeting? I could have told you the reason I'm sitting in a meeting because this miracle has occurred in my life. And I don't mean that in a religious way, but this miracle has occurred in my life and I am clean. Something that I battled again for years and years and years, and here I am, I wave the white flag of surrender, I come to these rooms, and this miracle happens and I'm clean. You know? And if this is not a power greater than myself that is restoring me to sanity, then I don't know what is. So straight away, just by coming to meetings, staying clean, within Narcotics Anonymous meetings, I believe I'm working step one and two. And you know what? As I've gone on in my recovery, I've gone from working the steps and becoming quite complicated about it, and I've come out the other end, and now I just keep it really simple. I find that's the way to do it for me, in any case. You know what I mean? We all have our individual ways of doing it, but I try and keep them as simple as possible. I love those first two steps. I love the second step as well. You know what I mean? I love the fact that it talks about... These steps are so gentle, you know? We all know people who will force you and say, you've got to do this, you've got to do that, but actually, the steps themselves, I think, are really gentle. We come to believe. Not we believe in a power greater than ourselves. We come to believe. Step two is the process of coming to believe that there is a power greater than ourselves that can restore us to sanity. And the most obvious form of sanity that's restoring me to at the beginning is I'm no longer using mind-numbing altering chemicals. You know what I mean? That means a lot more to me today. You know, my insanity comes out in many different ways today, you know. But at the time, that's what it was about, you know. So step one and two. And the other thing I love about step two, I had problems with the word God, you know. But I am living proof that there is a power greater than myself. If you understand that. If you had the same kind of powerlessness in your using and acts of addiction, you'll know what I mean. You know what I mean? I am living proof, we are living proof, I believe that wholeheartedly, that there is a power greater than ourselves working in our lives, restoring us to sanity. Now that is a very handy little stepping stone to where the G word comes in. You know what I mean? And when I used to talk about the G word, the God word, you know, I was always pointed out to me in recovery at the time that, Harry, you're on step one and two. That's step three. You can do that if you want. You know, when you get there, if you don't want to do it, it's entirely up to you. We're not going to force you to do it, but, you know, concentrate on one and two. So, actually, by the time I got onto step three, what I liked about it was I'd taken the drugs away. I'd realised just how empty I was, just how spiritually bankrupt I was when I came around, and I'd found this power greater than myself, which was meetings at the time. Nowadays, it's still meetings. It's meetings and the program. You know what I mean? That is restoring me to sanity. So I can believe that. And then the next step is the word God. And also, by this time, I've started to develop relationships with you guys. You know what I mean? And I like the way that you guys would use the word God and the word fuck in the same sentence. You know, that really appealed to me. You know, you seemed very grounded. You know what I mean? You could use the word like that. And I'm thinking, wow, this is not the happy, clappy kind of... You know, I had this, again, this fantasy that I was going to have to lock myself in my bedroom and sing hymns and obey the law, whatever that meant. You know what I mean? I can tell you I've done none of those things in recovery. Well, I do some of those things. I sometimes obey the law. You know what I mean? And, you know, but less said about that, the better. But, I mean, you know, so there I am in any case. And then suddenly I've got onto the third step, which is mentioning the word God, and I begin my relationship with the God of my understanding. And again, step three for me is incredibly important. It's probably the step I use more than anyway. And again, it's one of those steps that you read it in the first time, and I found it quite difficult in any case, you know. And you read all the gumph about it, and you hear it, go to step meetings and the rest of it, and you know what I had to do in the end? I had to come back to what the actual step itself says. You know, not all the gumph's written about it. Sometimes it's nice just to go back to what the step itself says, you know what I mean? You know, making a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand Him. You know, so I break it into little lumps. First of all, there's the God word. But it's not God, is it? It's God as we understand God. And I love that. You know, so it's a God of my understanding or God of my non-understanding. So there, straight away, is that big lump there. You know what I mean? And what am I doing? I'm making a decision to turn, now this is the interesting bit, my life and my will. You know, and so many people I hear when they're talking about step three, they talk about God's will. Well, I tell you what, guys, if you can find God's will in that, I can't. It talks about our will and our lives. That's the important bit. It talks about the care of God. You know, so what I'm doing is I'm taking my will and my life. And what makes up my will? Well, my will makes up, you know, the decisions I make in my life, for example. You know, relationships. I've got my kids. You know what I mean? That's part of my life. I might be thinking of changing jobs. I might be thinking of changing relationships. I might be having money problems, whatever it is. This is my will. My life involves my, you know, I just talk about things like my kids, for example. So this is what makes up my life and my will. And what am I doing? So I've got this lump. So I'm taking my life and my will and I'm putting it into this box, as it were. You know what I mean? All the things that worry me. You know, my daughter and my granddaughter are in Australia at the moment. You know what I mean? I miss them to death. And I just worry that, I don't know why I worry that I'm never going to see them again, but you know, I have these kind of maudlin thoughts, you know what I mean? And so I put them in the box, and I put the decisions I'm making about what I want to do in my relationship. Do I want to go and live down there, or do I want to come and live up here, etc. All these things that, you know, I know that I'm not the best decision maker in any case, so these are the things I do. So I'm taking my will and my life, and I'm saying to God, they are God, and I'm putting them into the care of God. And God takes care of it. And that's the important thing of step three, is that we are taken care of. And if I make the right decision, then there's no problems. I don't need to be careful. But if I make the wrong decision, as I often do, then I believe that God takes care of me. And it's not like, I don't believe God has his magic wand and waves it over me and suddenly everything is fantastic. You know, I've got money problems. Oh, look, there's a tenner on the floor. That must be God. You know what I mean? I don't believe in an interventionist God like that personally. You guys might do, but I don't. But I believe in this kind of God of grace. It's almost like those bumper cars that ride around, you know, in a fair. You know, you've got those things that stick up and you get the power from them. You know what I mean? And it sticks up there and you can hook in to that grace, I believe. You know what I mean? And then later down the line, I'm thinking, you know what? Whilst things didn't work out for me, maybe as I wanted to, I have been looked after. Mm-hmm. And then what happens is my faith in the God of my understanding starts to improve. I start to develop a relationship with that God of my understanding. And I need to develop that relationship because further on down the steps, especially when you get to step 6 and 7, if any of you guys have got there, you know what I mean? Gee, What incredible steps they are, you know what I mean? I've spent years and years before I could move ahead with those things, you know what I mean? But that's what I love about step three. So the first three steps, just in a nutshell, you know what I mean? And I love those first three steps, and I love the way they work in my life, and I love that simplicity with how I can still work them. And I've sort of carried on. So that's been about, that's been about kind of like a little bit about the beginning of my recovery. And, you know... As Gemma said, you know, I've had some fantastic times in recovery. I really have. I've just loved my recovery. You know, when I got clean, I lived on Bondi Beach. You know, that was fantastic. I remember being about 9 or 10 days clean. And when I first went to Australia, you know what I mean, when the drugs were still working, I remembered going out and trying to surf and all that type of stuff when I got out to the beach. And then it was like there was a brick wall built around there, you know what I mean? And there were the hotels that I used to score in, the Bondi Hotel and the Astra Hotel, all these places I used to score in. And I used to go down to score. I never saw the beach. I never saw it, you know what I mean? And when I got clean, it was like the scales had come from my eyes. There was this beautiful beach and the surf was there and the sun was shining, you know what I mean? And I was still bright white. You know what I mean? I'm thinking, I remember this. I'm going to go in and do a bit of body surfing. And there was a nice little surf running that day as well. And so there I am. You needed sunglasses to look at me. I was like a stick insect, honestly. I really was. I was like a victim of Belsen. You know, hard though it is to believe looking at me today. You know, there was no skin on bones on me at all. I remember going into the water, you know, bright white. This pummy bastard going into the water. And I went into the water and there was this wave and I thought, I'll catch this one, you know what I mean? I'm weak as anything. So, and the wave sucked me. I get to the top of the wave and at the top of it, I'm thinking, no, I'm not going to catch this. And I tried to pull myself out of it, but the wave had caught me and it speared me into the sand. And then I thought, tons of water sort of hitting me on the back and I don't know which way is up and which way is down. And then the water sucks off me, you know, and I'm just left on this wet sand. And you know what? I'm smoking 75 fags a day at this time as well, so I'm coughing up. I'm coughing up this black bile from my lungs, you know what I mean, as I'm trying to crawl out the water. So these people have seen this bloke go down onto the beach, get smashed up by a wave, and then crawl out the water, vomiting this black kind of like ectoplasm or whatever it was, you know. And they're coming down to the water and they're saying, are you all right, mate? Jeez, mate, are you all right? And I'm crawling out. And you know what, guys? I had never felt better. I'd never felt better, honestly. I could taste the salt water on my lips. I could feel the sun on me. I could smell the ozone, you know, that beach ozone. I could smell that. I could smell the suntan lotion, you know what I mean? I just loved it, you know. And I went up onto the beach, lay down in the towel. I went from bright white to bright red in 2 hours, you know what I mean? And stuff. So I started doing those kind of things. Things I enjoyed doing, you know, that I hadn't done for a long time. And you know, I love it. Again, that's about recovery. I felt... I can't what you were saying about what you liked out of recovery. You know what I love out of recovery, and what recovery means to me is freedom. Freedom. Addiction is the complete opposite to freedom. You know what I mean? I have the pleasure of going into Wayland Prison once every month and do some service in there. And those guys on the RAPT unit are clean. And they tell me they have more freedom being clean in jail than they do using on the out. And I understand that, you know. It's the freedom. And what I love about this program is about getting well. You know what? I have an illness. Sometimes I listen to people, I think we have a moral dilemma. Well, actually, I might well have a moral dilemma. I've got to be honest with you. You know what I mean? But actually, Narcotics Anonymous is about getting well. I have a disease, an illness, and I need to get well. Mm. It's not about a moral dilemma. And actually, when I came around, I didn't know where my boundaries were. I didn't know what I wanted to do. You know, drugs made me, I could be whatever I wanted with drugs. I could create this front, and then it was like this, and it was like the little Dutch boy with his fingers in the dam, and it just too much, and it just burst over me, you know. And then I came into recovery, well, what do I want to do? You know, where are the boundaries? You know what I mean? And somebody is saying, for example, you're talking about men. Well, somebody's saying, we've all heard the advice. Again, I've yet to find it in our literature anywhere, the stuff about relationships. No relationships in the first 6 months, year, 2 years, whatever they say. I don't know. No relationships in that time, you know. I can't find where it says that. And I just find that, I just think that's a really interesting thing to say to people in early recovery. You know what I mean? Is we are so immature. You know what I mean? When we first come in, and I still can be, you know what I mean? We are so mature that when we talk about relationships, the only thing we can think about is sexual relationships, which, let's face it, are fun, aren't they? Well, I think they're fun. In any case, I don't know about anybody else. I enjoy them. But you know what? When they say no relate, what you mean? I can't have a relationship with my family now. I can't have a relationship with my sponsor. I can't have a relationship with my kids, the other people in NA. No relationships in early recovery. What does that mean? Where does that come from? Because for me, this is all about relationships. It's about having relationships with people. You know, I love that idea that, you know, oh, no, we don't mean that. What we mean is sexual relationship. Well, have you had one? Yeah, I've had one. So, and you're telling me not to have one? Well, that sounds like bloody good fun to me, you know what I mean? So I'm gonna try my hand at this. It took me 7 months. I mean, you know, when I came into recovery and I felt like a 14-year-old kid again, which is when I started using. I remember sitting down next to this woman once at 7 months clean. You know what I mean? 28 years old I am by this time. Sorry, you're my wife. You're my girlfriend at the time. And I'm sitting there thinking, what do I do now? You know, I'm sitting there the whole night. You know, when we're sort of sitting there, both wanting to do something, but both not knowing. And honestly, guys, I did this. Oh! I put my head, my arm back. Like, what am I doing? You know what I mean? Half an hour later, we were in bed. And it was good fun. So I enjoy that stuff, and we learn through our mistakes, don't we? As it happens, that wasn't a mistake, you know what I mean? I was 7 months clean at the time, that woman was 2 months clean, and we later got married. You know, we got married and we have two beautiful kids, you know what I mean? And not only, and the kids, I love kids, you know what I mean? I love my kids to death. My kid's 20, I've just been to my son's graduation, he's 23 years old, went over to Australia for his graduation, 23 year old. My daughter, I now have a granddaughter, you know what I mean? But when they were born, I was there when they were born. And I don't just mean physically there, I was emotionally there when they were born. You know, I love that stuff, you know? All these things, the things that I didn't realise I was going to get enjoyment from and everything like that, all that stuff I just love, you know. And you know, a word of caution as well. You know, I'd love to sit here and sit there and say, you know what, recovery, and just leave it at that and say, you know what, recovery, fantastic. But you know what, 16 years after being in that relationship broke up. You know, my missus and I broke up, you know, and she's now in Australia. We get on fine. There's a strange thing. Have you ever heard such a thing? Get on with your ex-missus, you know what I mean? But we get on fine now, you know. And yeah, things that, you know, you're probably thinking, why is he back here? Why is he not lying on the beaches in Bondi? You know, well, one of the things when I first came in, I was an illegal immigrant. I remember sharing it at a meeting and somebody taking that information, going straight down the old bill and telling them that me and my mate were illegal immigrants. You know what I mean? And the next day, there's a knock at the door and there's the old bill outside. I'm standing in my underpants, okay? Typical old bill. Ring the security bell. Who is it? It's the police. You know what I mean? I'm out the back door like a rabbit running down Bondi Beach in my underpants, you know what I mean, trying to get away, trying to hit this thing called the Bronte Express, which is a rip which will take me around the end, you know, with these coppers after me. And eventually you get caught, of course, and, you know, I spent a bit of time in prison in recovery, and, you know, I didn't want to leave Australia, you know what I mean, but I found myself back here, you know. I've had the hardest thing I've ever had to do in my life was to stand at Heathrow and say goodbye to my kids when they went back to Australia. Yeah, 12 and 9 they were at the time. You know, it broke my heart to do that. You know, it really broke my heart. You know, I love my kids to pieces. Always get a bit like that when I talk about the kids. It broke my heart, that stuff, you know. I've had times in recovery not so long ago where I ended up in hospital with a blood clot in my lung and pneumonia, and I woke up on the Saturday morning with a priest at the end of my bed, you know what I mean? And I thought, oh, this is serious. This is serious. And the pain was so much, I was in so much pain that I had to take a morphine-based painkiller at the time, you know, which I really didn't want to do, you know, but I did that for a couple of days, and I came through that, you know. So, you know, life happens, you know, we have life back, life on life's own terms, you know, that's what we get. Life's still the same out there. Shit will happen in recovery. If you're in recovery and you're in it for the long haul, you will have plenty of shit. But what it is experience, isn't it? When I sponsor people, I have experience. I'm no better than anybody, but because I've been clean for 31 years, there's a good chance I've been in work, I've been out of work. I've had money problems, I haven't had money problems. I've been in trouble with the law, haven't been in trouble with the law. You know what I mean? All that in relation, out of relationship, had kids, not had kids. You know what I mean? Grown up, that's experience. All that stuff is experience. And what I've learned is every time I have this experience, I can use these steps, these tools I'm given, and rather than just talk about them or write about them, or read about them ad infinitum, I actually learn how to pick these tools up and actually work with them. And that's what I like about this stuff. And you know what, when this shit happens, I can't pretend that when my dad died, my sister died quite recently of this illness. And I can't pretend that when they died, my life was fantastic. But you know what? Because I'm in recovery, I was able to front up as the head of the household. You know what I mean? I was able to be there for my mum. I was able to organise the funeral. I was able to do that kind of stuff, you know what I mean? I was able to do that, and for that I am grateful. You know, to be able to do that stuff, I feel like I'm growing up. At long last, I feel I'm growing up, you know? And the one thing I always say at the end of my sharing is that, you know, I honestly believe, I mean, I've just had so much from recovery. As you can tell, I love recovery. I'm enthusiastic about recovery. I'm enthusiastic about meetings. I've always loved addicts. You know, I've always loved the misfits, and you're still misfits, and I still love you all. You know what I mean? I love that stuff. You know what I mean? But the message that I would like to give to people, and which was given to me when you get to that first meeting, is that every single one of you in this room can leave this room and you don't ever have to use again. You might choose to do that, who knows? There might well be other ways to do this thing. You know what I mean? I suspect there probably are, but nothing works like Narcotics Anonymous works. You know what I mean? And if you've come here, here is a solution. We are living proof that there is a solution. And with that, I'll finish. Thanks.